My, welcome to Paradigm Shifters. We have a really fascinating paradigm shifter with us today who has written a book called Baby, It's You. I'd like you all to meet Maureen McGill, who used to be a professor or teach dancing and has a long history of service with people and so on. But now her book is about messages from deceased heroes. Again, Baby, It's You. And that's messages from people who have transited, who have been killed in war, or veterans that have gone through something, connecting with the people that they loved. So welcome to the show, Maureen.
Thank you so much for having us on today.
I'm really excited about this subject because it's very heartwarming. Baby, It's You is a bunch of a whole series of short stories from people who experienced this. It's wonderful. What made you want to collect this kind of information, Maureen?
You know, I wrote another book called Live from the Other Side, and it's co-authored with Nola Davis. Nola is the CEO of a healthcare corporation here in the Northwest. Together, we wrote this book about ordinary experiences of how the messages come from the other side to those of us who aren't necessarily consider ourselves intuitive. So together, we sat down and collected these stories. And
but wait a minute, you're calling them ordinary experiences. I like that. That means that anybody can have those experiences, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I told Nola when the book finished and it was ready to be published, and that was Ozark Mountain Publishing that published our book. And I said to Nola, you know what? The second book I'm going to do is about soldiers. And I don't know what that calling is, but I've always been called to soldiers. And in about the last 15 years in dance and in choreography, I have created some works about military and death and dying. And so somehow that theme has been with me. Who knows, Veronica, maybe there was a past life in this or some kind of connection, but my heart has always been very deeply connected to veterans, and I appreciate those who are left behind and the sorrow that they go through. And the book was a confirmation that there's, you know, these love ties that continue even after death.
Oh, that's a wonderful thing, isn't it? Wonderful. Yeah, tell us about some of those, because I was wondering as I was going through this book whether you had actually been a vet, because you have the feeling of that. And I noticed that you have a let me see, somewhere in the book I was reading that you have a brother or a father or an uncle or someone who has been, who were all in the services. Is that right? Did you have a lot of people?
No, I did dedicate the book to my dad, who was in, of course, World War II, and also my two brothers. I had a brother that was in the Navy. And then I have another brother who was not in the military, but of course is a heartfelt brother. So I dedicated the book to those three.
Oh, that was wonderful. So let's talk about it. Tell us about how they make connections, or and how. Tell us a little bit about the kinds of people that you talked to and what they wanted to say about these connections that came to them.
And I'll also tell you about what the stories are about. Each of these stories are love stories, basically, and how these couples met and the song that was their song and their love connection together, and then how they meet now. Not all the stories are from wives. Some of the stories are from mothers. Some of the stories are from surviving heroes as well. But the message comes to them in different ways. She might smell him. She might hear his touch. She might feel his touch. She might hear his voice, or the children might see him standing on the porch. I wrote this beautiful poem at the beginning of the book, which really sums up how the couples meet now and then how they meet, how they first met together.
Do you want to read that poem, or do you want to read it?
I do.
Okay, let's read that. Go ahead.
So there's a great song by The Reflections called Just Like Romeo and Juliet. And all right now, I'm speculating, wonder what tomorrow's really going to bring. So we met in the laundry room in college. He carried my underwear to my dorm room in high school at a wrestling tournament, through my cousin, at Walmart where we worked, at a country bar on a Thursday night, at a nightclub on the dance floor, at a costume party with mask and a hat, on Instant Messenger. I was 17, he was 19, through his best friend Jeremy, in grade school when he played on the playground, on Facebook, and we were married after 1 month of dating at the pawn shop. On a blind date, on New Year's Eve in the convertible when I stopped for the red light and he pulled up right next to me. I love that story.
Me too.
At Burger King, where we worked at age 16 on a website called Hot or Not, where we exchanged photos when he was a football player and I was a cheerleader. But we meet now in my dreams, in the hallway when I smell him, in bed when I feel his skin touch mine, when I see his silhouette, his shoulders, his head, and how he held out his arms like he was holding a blanket, when the song comes on the radio at the restaurant, at church, or in the elevator, when I find pennies on the ground or in the weirdest places, when the basketball bounces on the court and no one's there, when I see him staring at me from the waist up when I'm in bed, when I find the Dutch key ring in the middle of the desert from him, when I meet the police officer who's wearing your memory bracelet, when I hear your voice saying, my son, when the kids see you standing in uniform on the porch, and when I find the heart-shaped sticker on a leaf, when the digital frame stops for no reason at your photo, and when he comes to me in my dreams with a message, when I hear his voice singing his favorite song.
Aww.
So those are all true experiences of how they met and then how they meet now. And it really sums it up about how the love messages continue.
Well, I love this. And it's also, as you said, it's a really, really sensitive issue. So how did you gather so many stories? Did people offer them? Did you go hunting for them?
So it was pretty much word of mouth that when one widow found out about it, it went on to the next. I'm very connected to a group in the country called the International Association of Near-Death Studies. I'm actually on the board here in Seattle. And I was given a wonderful recommendation from a woman who's a Gold Star mother. Her name is Nadia McCaffrey, who's also a near-death experiencer.
Who's an old friend of mine.
Nadia, right? And she has a beautiful story in the book and shared that with me. So the word just got out. I think, you know, with digital communication now, the word got out on Facebook that I was writing the book. The widows connected with me. They contacted me. We either talked by the phone or we exchanged emails together.
I love that. Now, tell me this. Some of these people are highly intuitive, but some of them don't have to be, do they, in order to experience this? Or they say that being widowed or having huge grief is one way to awaken a person's intuition. But I wonder what effect did any of these people have trouble believing it was their spouse or that their mother or whoever it was?
You know, it was interesting that they were so clear about when the message came that it was him. And the reason they said it was like a knowingness that they had never experienced before. It was so real. It was like he was right in the room or he was right in the dream and it felt so real. It was different than the other dreams and the other nightmares that they had. So it was interesting how they felt that the intuitive experience was so real in terms of the visitation that he gave them.
I think it's interesting you talk about the smell and so on. I had an experience like that where people forget, don't they, that we all have a unique smell. It doesn't mean a stink or anything negative, but each of us has a unique sense, don't we?
Yes. You know, the smell is just a real vibration, I think, that connects from the other side, that connects to us, is one of the ways that we can connect is that smell. You know, we associate certain holidays with smell. We're getting close to a holiday now, so many people might associate the baking smell, you know, with Christmas, or maybe the scent of evergreen, or maybe
spices or something.
Spices, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Certain winter kinds of smells. And those associations, for some reason, can come through that veil from the other side.
So did any have to be, this sounds like a funny question, but I think some people wanted it so much they would accept it in the moment. Did some people have to be kind of chased down by someone from the other side?
You know, I don't really know if they're chased down. I just simply believe that it's a love message that they gave him. Mm-hmm. I have a beautiful story of Allie and Robert. Mm-hmm. And Robert actually died in a stateside accident.
Okay.
But they were so close to each other. And he had to go out to physical training in the morning, very early in the morning. And she said that after he died, she would often wake up at 4 o'clock, which was the time that he usually left. And she said, you know, I would sit right up in bed and I could smell his armpits, because she used to sleep in his armpits, and he had a certain deodorant that he wore, and she would get this whiff at 4 a.m. of that specific fragrance of that deodorant. It was kind of neutral scent with kind of subtle citrus, you know, kind of tones to it, notes. Wow. It was extremely distinctive to her. So there you go. I mean, here he was checking in with her at the time that he would check in with her before he left in the morning.
Wow. That's a wonderful story. Also, is there any kind of rule of thumb, or is there any kind of pattern about how long after they cross over that they begin to show up? Because I think I remember in this, some of them didn't show up for quite a while. And did you get any pattern about that?
You know, I did not get any pattern on that whatsoever. I know that in Native American medicine, they talk about, or mythology, they talk about, you know, 1 year. Usually the message will come after 1 year. But, you know, there's different philosophies on that. But I've had experiences here in the book where it happened pretty quickly afterwards. Maybe it happened a few years, maybe it happened a year, maybe a few months. So there was no consistency.
So this is like human beings, right?
Right.
We aren't consistent. Now, I'm just going to jump back to part of your own introduction where you were talking about, you did some choreographing about veterans, or about life and death and war and all of that. Can you talk a bit about that? What did you bring forward?
Well, actually, the last dance that I did at the university here is I created a video, and in the video, we projected it in the background, and it was a video to pay tribute to those who contributed to the book. So I used images that were of couples parting, of couples coming together and couples parting. And then we went to a song that's in the book. One of the songs, the couple songs, was a Janet Jackson song called Together Again. And then I created a dance. So it was projected in the background, this beautiful song and images that go with this beautiful song. And then the dancers danced that kind of celebration.
Oh, wow. Sort of a free form dance, or you had a choreographed?
So it was choreographed. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the dance, of course, it was a tribute to every single soldier that was in the book. And each of the dancers came out with a flag that they carried, and they moved with that flag. And then they gently rested with the flag at their heart on a long diagonal. It was quite moving. Oh, and then wow. Out of a real uplight in the back came three soldiers walking toward them. It was very beautiful.
Wow. So here's one that's, I love that actually, but I've told you once before that I love the idea of choreography and life and death and souls moving. I really love that. I was going to say metaphor. It's not a metaphor. It's kind of a real image presentation, isn't it, of how our lives move through and how we meet one another and how we move on, and the sharing that goes on is beautiful, isn't it?
So it is beautiful.
Yeah, and
visual arts are a way to connect with that.
Yeah. So,
that message.
Did you train in all that as a child? Were you really into dancing as a small person?
I did dance as a small person. I did acting as a small person as well. I was involved with the children's theater group, but I was never at that level of dance where, oh, you're going to go into performance or you're going to go into choreography. But somehow my senior year in high school, I knew that I needed to work with my body. So I continued and went to the University of Utah, where they had a wonderful dance program. And I learned so much about dance, and then continued my interest in theater here in the state of Washington, and went on to Western Washington University and directed a children's play for my thesis, which was really fun.
Wow. So you've had a really interesting background. I also have learned a little bit about, if you move, I think you call it authentic movement or dance as well, where if you move, for example, as a vet, as someone you know, and you move and dance with him in mind, you can actually experience a lot of him and his life. I've heard a lot about that lately.
That's interesting. That's an interesting thing that for me to pursue. I think movement is a way to unlock blocks in our body, and of course energy centers, including the heart center.
Yeah, it's a really brilliant thing. And also in your foreword, there's a fellow here called Reverend Bill, who's an amazing man. He's had quite a history as a soldier himself, hasn't he?
Yes, he's a remarkable person. He's a Vietnam veteran, and he's a reverend in the associated with the military, not any particular religion, but he has dedicated his life now to working with vets and supporting them and their families in the work that he does. He's a remarkable person. He's very intuitive himself, and he's written some powerful books. A Spiritual Warrior is one of his wonderful books that he's written.
Well, and
I'm honored that he could write that.
I was touched by his foreword, the whole thing, but one of the lines that I pulled out was, "Never ever doubt the power of love to cross over and embrace us at any time or any place." And I think that ties in with our thing about moving. You can embody the reality of another being. You know, I really loved his foreword, and I love his connection to your work. He's an amazing man, isn't he?
Yes, he is. And I love this line that he wrote in the foreword, says, you know, the book takes on a really sad subject. And I know that he was reluctant to even maybe approach this or, you know, write the foreword. But when he read the stories, he realized that, you know, it really opens up heaven's door just enough to give us hope and faith. And he was honored to, you know, write a few words inspired about the book. So it's a pure act of love. It adds positive energy to the world. And that's what these stories are about.
Well, he also is a near-death experiencer, isn't he? Are you?
I am not a near-death experiencer. But Bill is, yes.
Yeah, but you also associate with a lot of people that do that, so you have a real understanding of that. You're quite the little reader yourself, my friend.
Oh, thank you for that.
So we're going to get Maureen to pull a few cards before we're done with this wonderful, this book is just delightful. And I found, back to what you just said, I found that it was very, very heartening to feel the huge loss in people and then feel that kind of restored, what would you call it? There's something very restorative when you really get the connection with someone who's moved on, right?
It's a confirmation, you know, that they're still with us. We want to hug them. We want to give them a kiss. We want to talk to them. But if we can just know that they're there, that's a confirmation.
Yeah, and also knowing that they're all right.
Yes.
You know, like a lot of them just move right on, don't they?
I think you know more about that work and the mediumship work that you do in your readings as a direct communicator to those on the other side.
But this must have actually, so I want to say back to, I have two ways to go. Of course, I always have about 10 ways to go because I'm all excited about the subject, about your subject, Miss Maureen. But let's talk about how they connect. Is it usually in dreams?
It could be in dreams. It can be a waking vision where it just seems so real. It can be through the senses, like we just talked about. Mm-hmm. She might hear his voice. The kids might see him on the porch. The senses are another way that the vibration comes through. It might be that song on the radio. You know, music is another vibration where they come through so closely. I mean, what are the chances for you to be standing in the elevator and there's the song that was your song and it has no relevance to that building or where you're at or anything. And it's just a confirmation. Hey, I know you're there.
Hmm. And some of them give actual instructions and directions from where they are to support someone. I was thinking of one of your stories in which that was imminent. What would I say? It's like she didn't really hear from her husband on the other side when she was dating perhaps the wrong person. You want to talk about that, how that got corrected?
Well, I'm not sure which one because we have a couple, but there was one fun story of Stephanie and Chad Groper. And Stephanie is a local widow here in the Northwest, and we've become friends. She's a director of the Washington Warrior Widow Project and hoping to make that as a part of the nation as well. But
tell us about that after you're done. After you're done, I want to hear more about that as well. Okay,
but
go ahead.
Stephanie, at my book signing, shared this wonderful story about Chad. Chad liked to drink a little bit, and he enjoyed his booze and alcohol, and they had a lot of fun together. And he was really the love of her life. And she said she kind of created this little memorial to Chad in the house, and she had this shelf with some of his medals and things on it, and also his bottles of booze on there, too. And she kind of worked up the courage to go out on a date after, it was quite a while after he died. And she brought the date in the house, and she didn't have a good feeling about this date. She just, you know, she wasn't really listening to that. She was just trying to be open to, you know, going out again and stuff. And then all of a sudden, they're sitting on the couch, and the whole shelf just falls down.
Oh my gosh.
And she shared that at the book signing and everybody laughed. And she said, you know, I knew right then that this was not a good situation, that I didn't have Chad's approval and that I needed to stop this dating thing with this fellow right away. So that was kind of funny.
That's actually very helpful. And there was another one. I'm trying to remember which page it was on, because you have a lot of stories in here. But there was one where she actually went through it and married a fellow who turned out to have other women and other wives or something. I think he was a bigamist or something.
Right.
But do you remember how that got resolved? Because I think the help came from the other side.
It truly came from the other side. To me, it's a Hallmark story. And anyway, it's Teresa Moorhead, and she had met this fellow online, and they really created a good connection. Next thing you know, they decided to get married, and yes, he was sending money back, but she thought it was to her church. But she had a kind of funny feeling a couple of days, and she investigated it further, and she realized that this fellow was still married to some other women, and she was just mortified, and she was very, very scared. So she decided to get a court order against this gentleman. And she got the court order, and her intention was not to be at the house when the police came to give him this court order. And unfortunately, she was at the house, but the policeman came to the house and they said that, you know, this police officer here is going to stay with you, but we're going to go to the back of the house and arrest him. So they go on to the back of the house, and she's in the front, and she's, of course, shaking and really upset. And the police officer just holds her hand, you know, and he's trying to calm her down and everything. He said, tell me about yourself. She said, well, I was married to Kevin Moorhead, and he was the love of my life, and he died in Iraq, and blah, blah, blah. She's telling him all about the situation, and all of a sudden, this police officer, looks at her, and he says, who is Kevin Moorhead? Is that what you just said? Is that the name you just said? And she goes, yes. And he goes, look at this. And he holds up his wrist, and on his wrist is a memory bracelet, and it has Kevin Moorhead's name on it. And he's not even in the same town or anything. So she knew at that moment that Kevin was protecting her. And what was the name of this police officer? But the police officer's name was Bear, B-E-A-R.
Ah!
Bear is known in the Native American medicine as a protector. So she knew that she knew Kevin was there. She knew Kevin was protecting her from this not such a good situation. So even that police officer was so moved by the story, he got in the car, in the police patrol car afterwards, and they pulled off to the side of the road, he and the other officer, and they cried. They couldn't believe the situation. They were so moved by this situation with, you know, Teresa having to go through this horrible situation after her husband had died in Iraq. But what are the chances that he had on his memory bracelet? He said he just did this to honor fellows who had died in the war.
So he didn't even think he was selecting.
No, it was just unbelievable.
I think that
is random, totally random.
But it kind of tells you that our intelligence operates at different levels, doesn't it?
It really does.
Because he made a life-changing story for me as well. I mean, for people who are reading that story, that's amazing, isn't it?
It's a beautiful story, and I'm hoping that would be a Hallmark story soon.
The other thing is somebody, you know, I'm an intuitive, and somebody phoned me recently and said, this sounds really crazy, but so-and-so's father or stepfather or something passed over, or it was her, I don't remember who it was, but somebody was really important to her, passed over, and she was going through a crisis, and all of a sudden, there on the phone caller ID was his phone number, and he was calling through. Now, everybody said that's not possible. I said it was real, but I'm an intuitive, so people going, what do you know? Anyway, there's some stories in here about people connecting by phone from the other side, aren't there?
Well, there definitely is a story in our first book, Live from the Other Side, where the same exact thing happens with the caller ID. And sometimes I think there are some stories in this book where it comes through at a certain time that they know that they're there, but they don't actually come through on the phone in terms of a voice, but perhaps maybe they heard them. But the caller ID thing in my other book, this couple had turned off the caller ID on their phone and everything, and yet that same number came through and that same person came. It was just like remarkable.
Ah, and people feel so heartened. Talk about our mutual friend, Nadia McCaffrey. She has done some, and I would like to talk about the warrior women or the widow warriors or whatever you called that group. But Nadia McCaffrey has done a huge amount, hasn't she, because of her son passing. Do you want to tell a little bit about her story?
Yeah, Nadia is a remarkable person who has helped veterans across the country now with Veterans Villages, with the foundation she's created in Patrick's memory. And I must say her grandson now is overseas in the war right now, and he's on the ground. So we're sending him lots of love and light. But Nadia has had a remarkable experience with her son in the book and shared that story with me. And it was actually a visitation experience that she had, where Patrick actually came to her in a kind of a waking vision and gave her a message that has been life-changing for her.
Wow. And she has made a huge difference to other widows and veterans, people that are left. She's made a huge difference, hasn't she?
She's made an imprint in the whole world in terms of her work with veterans and being a spokesperson in Washington, D.C., and just opening up her home, opening up her heart, and dedicating her entire life now since Patrick's passing to help veterans across the world.
And remember this part, too, when this is one of the things about her that makes her a real warrior-ess, is she fought with the whole government because they were bringing the fellows that had been shot over there, they were bringing them in the back door. They were bringing them home in their body bags or whatever in small airports so nobody knew. And she demanded they come into the big airports so people knew what was going on.
And she demanded that the press be allowed to take photographs of the draped coffins. Yeah. And that was something that was happening in the Bush administration, where they would not allow photographs to be taken. Like, this wasn't really happening. But she went to Congress and she fought that. She was on 60 Minutes and was interviewed with Dan Rather about the situation. And she's a remarkable warrior woman.
Yeah, and it was one way for her to work out her, many ways for her to work out her grief. She's an activist anyway. But I think a lot of these people would take action because of the vitality of their connections. So let's talk about the woman that you mentioned who was a warrior widow. What did you call it?
Stephanie Groper. Yeah. She's the director of the Washington Warrior Project. So she's just helping widows here in the state of Washington come together in grief support groups. And she's hoping to make this a national organization at some point. But it's a support group for widows where they can come together. They can speak about their situation.
I think that's really exciting that people have. I think it must give them a sense of viability. It must give them a sense of being that the loss was not a big waste.
I think it really helps. And also to talk about the messages that, you know, she still gets from Chad. She had a great message from Chad. And, you know, of course, I told you the one about the liquor and the memorial shelves that she had for him. But there was another great one. He loved pigeons for some reason. While he was in Iraq, he caught a pigeon. And it was kind of part of his night watch. When he was bored, he would kind of look at pigeons and kind of hunt them down and have fun with the pigeons. And she said that after his death, it was about the beginning of the month, and a pigeon started appearing at her house, sitting in her yard. Now, what are the chances for a pigeon to come to your yard, you know? Mm-hmm. She tried to chase it down many times, but it really liked her house. It wasn't until she tried to catch the pigeon and let me get super close, she said, that I remembered Chef's encounter with the pigeon and Chad's encounter with the pigeon in Iraq. It was also at that time that she learned that she was terrified of birds. And she said, we haven't seen a pigeon in a few years. So she knew that it was a message that Chad was saying, hey, I'm here. I'm at the yard. I've got you. I've got your back.
So that's a really interesting story. That's also one where you just, you can identify who's visiting you because of a very personal interaction with whatever the symbol is, right?
You know, it's being in that place of mindfulness, setting your intention in the morning. You know, why do some people get the message and some people don't?
Yeah, and, that's a good question.
You know, I don't know if it could be maybe simply that the grief that we carry is so deep and that the grief on the other side is also grief and maybe is so heavy that maybe that veil is very thick. I don't know. I don't know that answer. You might know as a near-death experiencer what that's about. But the key is if you set the intention, you're mindful, the message will come, and the message will come at the time when you're supposed to hear it. Some people might have to wait for the message, but if you're mindful each day, you can set that intention and know that, you know, it happens to you if you set your intention at the beginning of the day. You know, I really would like to meet so-and-so today. I hope I get a message about this particular position or job or maybe opportunity, or maybe you want to hear from a loved one, a grandchild that you have. You set that intention, and sure enough, you get a phone call from your daughter, or you get a phone, or you get a message about the job or the opportunity. It just comes. But if we set that intention, I think it's powerful.
Yeah, and I think there's another thing is you said right at the beginning how love, and so did Reverend Bill, how love is the like the ongoing connector, and we know that that's a vibration, right? And all of our we are vibratory experiencing people. And I'm going, some of the people when they're deceased, from my perspective, I don't know everything, but this is just my experience, that some are not forward motion for a while. They might be asleep. They might be recovering. They might be emotionally daunted or whatever, just as we are here. And then all of a sudden they start talking to other people down the road there in time when somebody thought they weren't going to anymore. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think that's...
Do you feel that the vibration on the other side is faster?
Yeah, I do.
These loved ones come, they're often very young, or they're very healthy, or the vibration is very clear. And I think it's because it's a healing vibration there, which is faster. And that's why children are very open to messages, sometimes more so, only because their vibration is youthful and young and vibratory, you know.
And they haven't learned to have all these thoughts and feelings, oh no, that doesn't exist, they're gone, blah, 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 blah. You know, they haven't learned to do all that, have they?
Right, they haven't learned to do that.
That's absolutely fascinating. It must have changed you radically to be doing these two books and to interview people who are relating to the other side so consistently, right?
Well, you know, in dance, I always felt that the awareness extends beyond the body. And there's an energy component to dance that I think is the energy component to life.
I love that. I believe that. Yes.
That's the challenging part for some people.
Yeah, but you were saying something about mindfulness. You were saying set your intention and so on. And I'm going to follow that up with another interpretation, which is when you're doing your dance, when people are dancing or meditating or whatever, our frequencies are much more sensitive to different dimensions, and that's where we get clearer messages, don't you think?
I think so. I think that there's an openness that we get through breath. I know that, of course, the great yogas do the pranic breathing, and that, of course, brings on that energy of the flow, and they're not so caught up in the body because that flow is there, and that energetic breath, that pranic breathing, that is the prana of life, life force.
And do you still dance, Maureen?
I love to improvise. And I love to take a form of dance called Zumba, and it's a great form of exercise. It's a bit like aerobics, but I enjoy doing that, and I do that during the week for myself. But I love to just put the music on and dance. I do that for myself.
Oh, good. Have you ever done authentic movement?
I don't really know that particular philosophy, no. Considered authentic, but... Oh. All my work has been authentic, but I don't know.
No, the only reason I'm saying that is because it is a genre, as you know. But it's just like what it is letting the energy come through you and move your body. So it's really like a total surrender to the energy that wants to move through your body, mind. And I'm fascinated because, like I said to you, I'm really interested in your relationship between choreography and understanding these different souls' interaction with life, and I just think it's a very exciting combination. Are you willing to pull some cards for us?
Sure, I would love to do that.
Okay, so what are we gonna what would you like to look at? You're very, very astute with the cards. So I'm going, we're coming into the Christmas season. We've had some horrendous violence in our society. There's a disruption going on in what used to be secure in society. I wonder if you have a few questions you'd like to respond to on that level with your cards, on those levels, any of those, your choice.
Maybe I'll just ask for the hope in this Christmas season, this holiday season. Not everybody celebrates Christmas, but let's just pull some cards for hope in this season and see what we get.
Okay.
See how we can interpret those.
Yeah, I like that.
So the first cup out is Six of Cups. And this cup is a, this particular cup card is two young people offering sweetness to each other, offering love to each other. It could be siblings. It could be friends. It could be simply just giving a flower to your neighbor. So to me, that represents unconditional love. Now we must be in there. We must be there with our neighbors. We must be there on the street when we're online at the grocery store, wherever it might be, just being in that place and that vibration of unconditional love and sweetness.
I love that. Can you pull one about the, let me see, we're talking about veterans and we're talking about how it's love that connects them. Can you talk, can you pull a card on war? Can we stop the wars? Can we change that whole thing?
Well, one of the ways we can stop it is to stop this whole idea about money and what money is creating and greed. Because the card that I got is the King of Pentacles, and he represents money and greed.
Uh-huh.
He could represent greed. He could represent simply money and power. So maybe it's really looking at money and power in a different way that will stop that greed and stop that, you know, worry about conflict and war.
I love that. That's a really good help. What about awakening? Are we awakening? I mean, your book is helping us awaken to the practicality of something that some people might have considered to be airy-fairy, right?
I think so. The card that comes up is Five of Wands. There's just a lot coming at us right now to awaken to. The environment, the world, the climate. There's so many things that we have to awaken to now. And so it's a matter of getting those wands back in order and paying attention to what the earth really needs.
Isn't the Five of Wands, now I'm not a card reader, but isn't the Five of Wands the one where the fellow has a big bandage around his head?
No, he does not. What the fellows are doing is that they're all exchanging their wands. They're struggling with their wands. Their wands are going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So there's many struggles in the world now. And until we can solve these struggles, you know, we will have peace at that time.
But, you know, you've already said it in a way, is that it's going to take sitting side by side and being loving and giving to one another, right?
Right.
That's a huge awakening, is it not?
Love is the healing power in this world. Unconditional love.
Unconditional love. So we have to spread it out there. Maureen, what do you think?
Got to do it, sister. Put the music on.
Okay, so I want you to pull some cards on this. For example, I have this issue. I used to teach school, so I'm like you. I'm kind of a teacher in a way. And I used to get really, really mad many, many years ago about the media and how the media influences our thinking. So talking about love, talking about sharing, that world covered with media could have a huge impact. Can you pull something or draw a card on that subject of media and see if it's up for any transformation? I mean, it could be an amazing illuminator, couldn't it?
I think when the media follows the truth, that's the illuminator. It's what really the truth is, and making them accountable for the truth. I have to say that, you know, in the United States, we've been watching these debates, the Republican Party, Democratic Party, that come on, and it would be really nice if they had some kind of fact checker. Fact, it's called the FACT fact checker, right at the, you know, at the bottom of the screen, to say, okay, here's a fact that's incorrect, here's a fact that's correct, and it keeps going through, so that you're actually making people accountable for what they're saying, and not creating the truth, the lies, you know, of what they're saying. So it would be really good if the media could do that. So that's Maureen's personal philosophy.
No, I like that a lot, Maureen, because it's like people like to be charged up by the dissonance or by the juice of the drama, but they don't check the facts. So I agree with you. And have you heard on NPR, they literally have a group around election time called Pants Are on Fire. Remember we used to say as kids, liar, liar, pants are on fire, go blow your nose on a telephone wire. That's what we said as a little kid.
That's great.
So I noticed the last big election thing, they had this pants on fire thing about various people who were giving speeches. So I agree with you totally. And draw a card on it and see whether we're about to. See, because people keep saying there's going to be huge shifts. There has to be for global warming, right?
Right.
And I think there has to be regarding media and what we're willing to listen to and believe and all that. Yeah, there has to be. Or what's got to be marketed. I guess maybe that has to change.
So the cards are tricky to understand, but the first card is Ace of Cups. It's spirit that's working this, or it's emotions that are working this.
Yay!
When the media works with our emotions, and that's what they try to do, is bring us in to our emotions, to stir up those emotions until they can really present it in a way that's neutral. You know, this is what's happening. This is what can change it. You know, this is what can be the passion. And then more discussions. It says Three of Wands, more discussions about what the truths really are. And maybe not seeing clearly the sadness that is brought so much into the media. There's so many beautiful stories that happen every day, but it's those, this, like you said, disturbing stories that take the road.
Mm-hmm. I know, because they bring up the juice of excitement, don't they?
And it's the Tower card that comes up. You know, it's the unexpected is what they love to go after. That brings our attention visually as well as emotionally. Mostly it's emotional, I believe, more even visual. But it says waiting within two, that maybe there's going to be some changes. There will be some offers to make some changes. I think that there'll be some different people in power that might make some changes, which would be a good thing too. So,
do you think Trump is a good person to be in power? You don't have to answer that.
I think that the truth is revealed already about that. And the fact checker should definitely be on underneath the...
Well, I like that idea of having a TV screen with a fact checker running across the bottom. I really like that.
You know, there's a part of our culture that loves extremes, you know. It's just kind of like salt and pepper. They want it to be salt or they want it to be pepper. And so they can be a magnet sometimes for these people who come through that have extreme philosophies and are real extreme without really thinking through what the consequences are.
What do you think about, are you still doing cards on that? I don't want to interrupt you because this is very nice. It's very enlightening.
No, it's fine. And okay. I'd be happy to pull some cards about your year as well. So we can do that maybe here at the end of the show.
I'd love that. I was thinking about people like Stephen Colbert. I'm touched by his ability to bring forward. David Letterman did a bit of that, but Stephen Colbert is bringing forward a lot of, I want to say, juicy ways of people starting to look at how intricate some of the deceptions are. He's able to bring it up. And do you see, can you pull a card on that and see, draw a card on that and see whether he's going to get somewhere? Because I really think he should. I think he should.
He's an American comedian and a writer and a producer and a great presenter of information in a way that's humor and yet it's the truth. You know, he makes you really see the truth.
Yeah, he doesn't give you an answer. He gives us a lot of questions and juice that we have to kind of go through and go, right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he offers our imagination places to really think about what the truth is in a way that takes his sword out and goes, it's here right away. You know, like he can take his sword out and really make it happen.
I hope they're not going to kill him off, but anyway.
Oh, let's not even put that possibility out there.
I know. But it's just that he's making a difference, and I know he is. The other thing is you talked about the Tower card. Let's talk about that a little bit, because it's got a lot different imagery than some people think, right?
Right. So the Tower is two buildings, and these two people are falling out of the buildings. But the Tower represents the unexpected, the unusual. It doesn't mean negative. It doesn't have to mean negative. It could mean something very unusual is happening just out of our, you know, range very quickly.
So it could mean that something that seems stuck gets broken apart, can't it?
It can, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I want you to ask some questions for me, although I could ask you a lot of questions about world events. Do you like doing that?
I'd love to make it a personal thing here at the holiday for you to create some cards for your inspiration for your life, because I know you got some changes going on. You just wrote a book as well, right?
I did indeed. And I'm calling it my near life experience, and you're involved in the near death experience, people. So, but I would like you to take a look at my life and see whether Let me see. How about this? Can my radio shows with people like you, wonderful people, make a difference?
Well, we already know it is making a difference. The Fool, it's simply a choice for you. You might be ready to do some adventures for yourself now. You're at the bench and you're working and things are starting to mount for you in terms of your own work and creativity. Your own intuition is starting to keen up. And there's more opportunities for you now online, whether it's doing your radio, whether it be creating blogs, whatever it might be. And there's also some opportunity for you now to have that balance of rest and retreat and celebration. You've been through a lot in your life, that it's time now for you to have that chance to make your work a celebration.
I love that idea. I love to celebrate, don't you?
I love to celebrate as well.
We could dance. You could teach me to dance.
My publisher right now, Ozark Mountain Publishing, for having the confidence to produce Baby It's You, Messages from Deceased Heroes. I'll be a guest speaker at their convention coming up in April.
Oh, wonderful. Where is that going to be?
And that's going to be in the Great South, Arkansas. It's going to be in Arkansas. And that's the headquarters for Ozark Mountain Publishing. Dolores Cannon has been the publisher for there, and she passed away last year. Her daughter, who is Julia Cannon, is taking the reins of the company. She's been involved with the company for several years. She's a healing touch practitioner and very much interested in energetic medicine. And she's now continuing the reins. So hats off to Ozark Mountain Publishing for that.
Yeah, and Dolores Cannon made some huge, huge shifts in human consciousness, did she not?
She really did. She was transforming for transgression therapy and also UFOs on the other side of, you know, making that connection and looking at the history and the work and that. And a remarkable person she was and a remarkable teacher. And her daughter's now taking the reins around the world and is teaching the work now of Dolores as well as her own work, which is in the work of energy medicine.
Wow, this is wonderful. And so I'm glad you're going to be at that one. Maybe a person should get over there and watch you, and not just watch you, but participate in such a, what would you call it, almost a stew of transformation that would be coming.
There'll be some great speakers there. And they can stay connected on my website called babyitsyou.org.
Okay.
Babyitsyou.org. I'll be posting the confirmation, the conference information very soon on there. And also on my Facebook page, which is Baby It's You, Messages from Deceased Heroes. I can join our Facebook page as well.
And do you see, calling awakening, like your awakening right now, I can see it. Do you see yourself creating, oh, I don't know, different books and different dance styles beyond these books that are awakening for you and for other people? You see yourself going on doing that sort of thing?
I do see myself moving forward and doing this work, the intuition work, and hoping I can stay connected with the body as well as my body ages. And I look forward to that. I look forward to new opportunities of travel and getting the word out and extending that confirmation that we all have these intuitive powers. It's just a matter of tuning in and listening. Such a healing vibration.
So let's do some cards. I really love that for you. I'm excited about what comes up for you. Let's do some cards on global warming. Can we do that? And on awakening to, I suppose I shouldn't lead the cards, but I'm going awakening to the vision of being able to heal for Mother Earth, to help her adjust to shifting temperatures and heal where we've...
So the first card out is the King of Cups, and he represents the king over the waters. So it seems to me that our oceans and our waters and the protection there, we're going to have to be first in that, in the work that we're doing. And then the next card is Seven of Swords and the Emperor. So there's going to be a lot of fast movement with power and authority, and it does say the wish is there. So I believe that the work is being done on helping to save our issues regarding water in the world, and I hope that that is truly the case.
I really hope it is too. Somebody told me a story in a movie called Slingshot that somebody had invented this very sort of manageable, not very expensive tool that could really purify water and also help create water, and that it was going to be distributed through Coca-Cola, because even though they're not exactly famous for healing waters, they have a great distribution system. So I don't know, but that reminded me that things can happen and shift in a short period of time when it gets into the right network. And maybe we're the right network. What do you think?
Who knows? Everybody's the right network. We all have to do our work to make it happen.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is it's kind of...
Can't ignore it anymore.
We might want to ask the cards as well about how we're doing as far as, like we talked about waking up, and we talked about getting in truth with ourselves and being loving and recognizing the value of love. Is that spreading around the world? How does it look? Does it look like it's spreading amongst all the people?
It says that there's an offer for it. There's an offer for it. That people need to come together. Ten of Pentacles. There needs to be more meetings. There's a lot of loss that's out there in the world. There's a lot of money distribution that's not fair, and there's corruption out there as well. These are the cards that are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So until we can get past these, will be the changes. But I do believe that there will be changes. And I did get the Star card, which means there's hope, faith, light, beauty, and grace. And once the Star reaches those in power and those people who have the power, that's and less corruption, that's when the shifts will begin to happen.
Hmm. Now, a lot of us, Maureen, me included, so this can be a personal draw if you don't mind, but there's a lot of us been moving around for reasons of intuition, being led this way and that way and so on. And I noticed Gloria Steinem's latest book, she calls it The Traveler or something about traveling, stories about traveling. I haven't got the book yet, but I love it. But I was just going, do you see through the cards, can you see that there are a number of beings that are having, besides the refugees, because they're part of the huge thing, having to move around in order to gather the potency or power of what their message is, of who they are? Is it going to be unstable that way for a lot of people, including me? Or is it going to be unstable for me?
It just says that there's strength, that we need strength here at this time, and we need to pay attention to messages that come to us.
Hmm.
And the card of phone, fax, emails, or the media, or the unexpected that comes into our lives. And we need to finish up old patterns that don't serve us anymore so that we can open up to these doors. And that the true work is the messenger of love that we must become in our lives, and a clear judgment about that.
Boy, that's a good story. That should be a Christmas card, shouldn't it?
It should be. Well, I can't thank you enough for having me on to share Baby It's You messages from deceased heroes. And, you know, the book is available on Amazon and on Kindle. It's also available through our publisher, Ozark Mountain Publishing. But I really appreciate you, your intuition, the work that you're doing in this world, and the work of affirming authors like you do. So thank you so much for having me on today.
Oh, I really enjoyed our talk today, and you've covered a lot of territory, Miss Maureen. And best to you. Happy, happy season. And Baby, It's You. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. It'll touch your holiday season. For those of you who haven't got it yet, get it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, this is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you for tuning in to Paradigm Shifters. Many blessings.